Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 428 for comics originally released on October 21st, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Titans Hunt number 1. This is a 12-issue limited series. It's written by Dan Abnett. We've got art by Paolo Sequeira and make sure I get the other artist's name right. Geraldo Borges. I'm going to go with Borges because, you know, resistance is futile. How long have you been reading Titans, and what's the earliest incarnation of Titans you've read, Drew?
The George Perez stuff.
Okay, so New Teen Titans.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. I started reading it off the rack at that point, but I've since gone back to earlier incarnations. The reason I mention that is you look at the cover here, and the seven characters they focus on are really the old school original Titans, pre-New Teen Titans. So there may be a couple here I'm not sure if you're going to be familiar with.
Yeah, like the Cave Boy?
Yeah, Narc.
Yeah.
Haven't seen him in ages. He showed up once, I think, in the New Teen Titans run. But he was a caveman who hung with the Titans back in the 1960s published books.
I don't remember a lot of Aqualad either.
He was one of the original Titans. Originally, it was Aqualad, Robin, and Kid Flash, I believe. They added Wonder Girl accidentally later. I say accidentally because at the time, Wonder Girl didn't exist. That was back in the era when they would do, you know, stories of Superman when he was a boy, or stories of Wonder Woman when she was a girl. And Wonder Girl didn't exist, but somebody didn't realize it, so suddenly she did, which is just kind of funny. But then they added a couple of other characters back in that original run of Teen Titans. And that original run lasted for 40-ish issues. I forget exactly how long. Stopped for a bit and then kind of restarted, picking up the numbering where it left off. You never see that these days. And it went for another dozen or so issues, maybe half dozen. I forget how many. But it's that era of the Titans that we're calling back to in this whole series. And there were a couple of nice call-outs, you know, when Arsenal was, you know, getting referred to as Speedy and stuff, which, of course, was his original code name back in the day. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was clever.
Seeing Narc at the Ice Age store, which is a bizarre name for a store, but all right, we'll go with it, was kind of fun. Definitely a more modern kid than the original version. But given how many shout-outs it had, and how far back it was, you know, kind of pulling from that original group. How well did this work for you?
It was okay. I'm not really sure exactly what we're going for here. You know, it's kind of interesting to see the file at the end. You know, I guess we're going to, you know, people are hunting these guys and here's that they're going after them. And I guess I kind of get what we're doing. It's hard for me to think of these characters as teenagers. They're drawn so much older than that, and it kind of bothers me. I wish they were actually drawn as teenagers if they're going to be teenagers, you know?
But I think that's why this is called Titans Hunt versus Teen Titans Hunt. Is these were Teen Titans years ago. I put them at early 20s.
And that's it. Okay, so we don't have to suspend our disbelief like we do with the other Teen Titans book.
Yeah, I don't think these are supposed to be literally teenagers. I'm putting them early 20s, and the stuff that they're referring back to easily 5 years ago, maybe a little more, a little less, depending.
That's a little easier pill to swallow, I think, especially when, you know, Arsenal gets hammered. And I'm like, oh, I know you used a fake ID, I guess.
I put it as a legit ID. I think, I
don't know. It seemed like they were trying to say it was a fake ID.
They were kind of implying that. But I think he's been old enough. I'm putting him at early 20s. So I think he's been old enough to drink for a little bit. That's not to say he hadn't used a fake ID before. but they could have been clearer on that aspect of the storytelling, certainly.
Did I think you see the inference been. There?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wasn't just me.
The guy is definitely questioning it. Hey, you look like a teenager and that kind of stuff. Implying that what's on the driver's license implies he's significantly older than he probably is. Questioning if there was a Roy Harper Sr. that he just, you know, edited the driver's license of. I did like the cameo appearance by Animal Man. It was a nice little, you know, kind of nod to the bigger continuity, but it was a throwaway guest appearance, if that. I mean, cameo is a little glorified, actually. I'll be honest, I was really kind of puzzled as to where they're going with this. I thought it was an extremely slow start to the series. We don't even get all of the classic Titans in this issue. And they're focusing on the Titans from the 60s, not the new Teen Titans. So we're getting Lilith, Narc, Mal, instead of Starfire, Cyborg, Raven, and stuff. Not sure if we're going to get Changeling or not, because he was a member of that era of the Titans as Beast Boy. So he could show up. And the end of the issue kind of promises and later solicits that we're going to get Hawk and Dove. But they're not pictured on the front cover, so not sure what's up with that. They're not even pictured on the final page, so not sure what's up with that. But, I mean, even going back to the cover, okay, we've got a forgotten Titan. But, I mean, why are the Justice League and these other characters, the newer Titans or whatever, the newer characters that may not have ever been Titans in some respects, because I don't think Starfire ever was, from what we're seeing. The continuity is confused, and I'm not sure where they're going with this, who's after these characters, or why, much less why we should care yet.
I really like the cover with the monument in the middle. Is that an homage to... It looked very familiar, like it was an homage to another cover that I should know, like a major cover. Is that the one you have?
Yeah, it's the one I have. I'm just trying to think. There are a couple of things that I think were, if intentionally done, very subtle nods. The paving stones in front of it forming a T formation, reminiscent of the Titan's Tower. I'm trying to think if they had that kind of a monument up there on the Titan's Island for any of the characters. But again, that would have been the new Teen Titans, I'm thinking, not this era of the Titans.
Well, this might just be a comic book cover trope. The solemn group of superheroes honoring a fallen comrade, you know? Maybe that's just a cover that gets trotted out a lot, and it just feels familiar.
It's definitely familiar. It's reminiscent, actually, of JLA-JSA team-up covers, where you've got kind of it would be the JSA where we've got the Titans here and some stuff like that. I'm sure if we did a little looking on, like, Comic Book DB and stuff, we could find a lot of covers very similar to this. Whether they're directly doing an homage, and if so, which cover and why, I'm not so sure.
Right, right. I think this is probably a better fit for fans of this group of characters, or of Titans in general. I don't think if you're fresh coming into this, you're going to get a lot out of it. It's not a very good number one in that. It doesn't really set up exactly what to expect from this series well enough, in my opinion. It just doesn't quite do it. There is some fun stuff in here, and there's some nice splash pages and some pretty good art throughout. It was surprising with a couple of artists working on it together. I thought it was pretty good. But for me, it didn't hook me. It's not something that I plan on reading any more of. So it's slightly below average at a C-.
I can totally understand that, because I think they were pitching this towards long-term Titans fans, and I mean long-term Titans fans. But I'm also wondering how well it's going to connect with some of them, because what we see here of Aqualad and stuff, it's like, wow, this is a very different version of Garth than we've seen since Flashpoint. And that may not resonate with readers coming in for kind of the nostalgia thing. And the Hornblower character we get, not even by name, we get Mal Duncan, and he was like a C-list Titan or whatever, that went by the names Hornblower, Herald, and the Guardian over the years. And his wife, I guess, there, Karen or whatever, is presumably, or at least in many other incarnations and timelines, she was Bumblebee. So as a long-term Titans fan, I definitely think it's aimed more towards me than somebody coming a little fresher to it like yourself. But even so, I thought it was a little muddled, a little unclear. And that's as much because of all the machinations that the New 52 did to the timeline. So I like it, but the Titans, all the various incarnations and versions, by and large, some of my favorite characters. You know, I love the team. But if I were coming into this cold or whatever, or not as a hardcore Titans fan, I'd be kind of right there with you. I think they were banking too much on nostalgia and didn't do enough setup. So for me, it again, I'm biased. I'll be flat out upfront about that. I like the Titans. I loved what we were seeing. Getting to see characters we haven't seen in years was fun. I'm going with a B-, but this could have and easily should have been something that, as a hardcore Titans fan, I should be just raving about, thinking it's wonderful. And it's better than average, but
definitely should have checked the boxes a little better for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they should have made the threat to the Titans clear, and the basic plot line wasn't clear. So it may read much better in trade than it does as a single issue, but I didn't buy it in trade. I bought the first issue. And don't get me wrong, I'll buy all the rest of them too. But I can totally see how it just didn't click with you, which is a shame.
Now, I don't know if you covered this on the latest Mayo report, so maybe I'll post that as a question on the forum for your next Mayo report. But I would be curious, now that the New 52 is kind of gone by the wayside, and the branding has. It was a success. The New 52 was definitely a success for DC, and it brought a lot of lapsed readers back into the fold, myself included. But I just wonder how far back now to Earth has DC fallen after their initial highs, and, you know, not having a September event this year. I'm just wondering if they're clearly getting beat month in, month out by Marvel now soundly. I just wonder if it's back to pre-New 52 levels at this point. And it was a bold experiment that maybe does run its course.
I'll have to do a little digging to see how it's really doing month to month for the whole line and some stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is, they were getting trounced before on a regular basis. So
before the New 52.
Before the New 52.
Right, right. And I applaud them for trying this. And like I said, I think it was successful, and, you know, really was a rising tide that lifted all boats there for a while. So, hats off. But I just wonder if maybe it's run its course and now they're back to those pre-52 levels.
Probably. I would, again, have to do a little digging on that. The bottom line is, they got people interested. They got people to sample. They did that before, though, with the 1 year later and a few other times. What they didn't have is rock solid storytelling and just amazing content to keep people. So getting people interested, getting them to sample, that's half the battle, but I'm not sure it's the important half. If people do what you did, of read this issue and said, you know, hey, it's just not good enough for me to come back, what's the point of having gotten you to read the first issue?
Well, yeah, we see that all the time with these number ones that are giant flashes in the pan across all publishers, really. And then you see 75% drop-offs. And, you know, that, sure, some of that's just people chasing variants, but a lot of it's just, that story wasn't very good.
But I don't think this is going to top the charts either for the first issue.
No.
So they need to work on their storytelling, and this is a prime example of it. They had some good content, but not enough of it in this issue. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Mm-hmm.
Karnak number one. This is written by Warren Ellis. We've got Gerardo Zaffino on the art. This is a new ongoing book with Karnak as the lead solo feature, headlining the series, which I find just a very odd choice. Out of all of the different Inhumans, I don't know that Karnak would have been even in my top 10 to have picked. He might have been, because off the top of my head, I'm not sure I could list necessarily 10 Inhumans that I think could carry their own series. But I really don't know that I would have gone with him.
This one probably won't be carrying its own series either. I get a feeling this is a Prez situation. This is either a 6 or a 12 issue series, I'm sure. I can't see this being hugely popular.
Me neither. Karnak, definitely a bit of a jerk now, and I don't think he was that way before. I feel we're getting a kind of a darker version of the character and not what we'd been seeing over in the recent Inhumans title that Charles Soule had been writing. This also was just an insanely decompressed issue. It took, what, about 5 pages for Karnak to pick up the phone, get the call from S.H.I.E.L.D. and go out and meet the Jet. And I'm like, really? That's all we get in those couple of pages?
I got to agree with you. I was really hoping he would actually get to the Inhuman in question that he's searching for in this issue. And we just kind of went on the mission this time, left on the mission.
We spent a lot of time talking about the mission before going on the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Only the last couple of pages are really him doing anything on the mission. And all of that he does without saying a single word.
Yeah.
And we get...
But I mean, you're Marvel's editor for this line. Are you going to go to Warren Ellis, the Warren Ellis, and you're going to tell him, man, tighten this up. you're just stretching for time here.
There's two questions there. I, as a Marvel editor, would I have gone to Warren Ellis for this book? Probably not. Because he's, I think, gone on record many, many times saying he's not a fan of the whole superhero genre. Great. Don't have him write superheroes. He's a brilliant writer. Have him write something else. Now, that having been said, they went this direction. They've got this. Here's the story. Would I have said, hey, tighten this up? Well, let's see. The last 4 pages have a total of less than 12 panels across them and not a single line of dialogue. Yeah, I think I would have gone and said, you know, dude, something's got to happen in this issue a little bit more than it did. This is not something that's going to entice somebody to come back for the next issue.
And yeah, well, you're not going to be working at Marvel very long then.
Because... I'm not working at Marvel now. So
because Warren Ellis isn't going to do that. It's a splash hire. He came and he's probably a fan of this character or something. There's a reason why he's doing this.
I'd love to know why he's doing it.
Yeah.
And if he's a fan of the character, that's awesome. And it's not that what he did here was bad.
Oh, no.
But what he did here was entirely set up and very little, if any, payoff. And frankly, not a ton happens here. You know, he gets called from S.H.I.E.L.D. He talks to Coulson. He finds out there's a missing Inhuman. That takes most of the issue. And then he goes for a couple of pages to quietly go do, you know, a little stuff, little gratuitous action.
But,
that's it.
But I think it was written very well. I think the character, I have a firm understanding of the character, his powers. I know what the deal is going to be, what we're going to get from this series. I think I do anyway. And
Okay. Let me ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
What is his power?
His power is to find the weakness in someone and exploit that weakness.
So the flaws in all things.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting power set. I didn't know it before coming in. I think it's kind of a cool power. Unique.
It is his power. It is very interesting. It's odd, though, he can't see the flaw with his own behavior and how he's basically a jerk and kind of isolating himself. So
yeah, it's tough for us to look in the mirror sometimes.
Yes, yes. Apparently he can't do that. What's his personality? What's his goal? Why is he doing all of this? I am a little confused on that.
It seemed to me it was pretty it was monetarily driven, and he has a secondary reason, a secondary goal with this Inhuman that he's going after.
I'm good with that.
But there's something else there. It seemed like with his parents and a secondary mission that he had in his head. That one I'm not 100% sure of.
Why is he hanging at the Tower of Wisdom? Why does he need the money to go fund that place? Why is he not with the Inhumans? And yeah, some of this is it's 8 months later. Things have happened. We'll find out later, I guess. But this is a completely radical departure from his status quo up until recently.
Yeah. But I get it.
That's even going after he died and came back from it in his recent status quo. So that to depart radically from that's pretty impressive. But again, Warren Ellis, impressive writer. This just seemed like not much happened.
Yeah, I mean, there are some very sparse panels. I think it's a full mark better than the DC book, though. I really thought it was cohesive, and it really told me what I needed to know. And I really kind of want to see what happens when he finds this Inhuman that came out of the cocoon and what his powers are, because his powers seem to just be good health. And so I'm interested in exactly what this new Inhuman's powers are going to be. And so there's enough here to propel me into issue two. And that's good for a first issue to hook me a little bit. So yeah, I gave it a full letter grade higher. I gave it a B minus.
Interesting. I am curious about the new Inhuman, because he's healthier, not like extraordinarily healthy.
Healthier than he was.
Yeah.
In real life.
No longer allergic to peanuts. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious where they're going with that, but I also fear that it's not going to be that he's an Inhuman as we have known Inhumans to be.
Yeah. Perhaps he had a gluten allergy and now he no longer does.
Hey, that would certainly get me hooked. give me the Terrigen Mists. I'll go for it. I guess for me, I thought this was light. I thought it took too long to get going. It wasn't bad, but it was such a small chunk of a story. This is something that in years gone by, decades gone by, let me be reasonable, if this were written back in the 80s, this would be the first three pages of the book. Ring. Oh, it's Coulson. Okay, let's go. There's a missing Inhuman. Great, let's go. You know, it'd be a little bit more than that. You could still do some characterization, and we get some good characterization. Well, maybe sort of, actually not entirely. I just thought it was not a rewarding reading experience for $3.99. And
yeah, I'll give you that.
It's not that what was there was bad. It's that there wasn't enough plot there.
I'm sure we'll look back on this when it's in a trade as five or six issues and say, you probably could have done this in three. Yeah. And we say that a lot, though.
This reminds me of the Moon Knight run where it took him six issues to get across the room. The Jeff Loeb run on Hulk where, frankly, nothing happened for the first couple of issues by and large. It was like four scenes per issue or something. And it made the action. So I expected more. And I know Warren Ellis can deliver more.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to go with a C+. It was better than average, but...
But, yeah.
It needed to be better than it was. I don't see, based on this, Karnak being a strong enough character either before or after this issue or during this issue to headline his own series. I don't see it having enough plot for people to feel they got their money's worth. I think six issues is certainly a possibility. 12 seems possible but unlikely, and only because he's an Inhuman and they seem to be pushing Inhumans.
Yeah. Now DC has a much longer leash on its titles, so I do anticipate Titans Hunt to last a little longer, but I would say maybe 8.
It's scheduled for 12.
Oh, okay. It is scheduled for 12.
So I'm expecting it to go the 12.
Yeah.
I'm expecting it near the end to be not so great selling, but I could be wrong on that, and I hope to be wrong on that.
Yeah, this is a title that will go 6, and then they'll say, we were always going to go 6.
Then say that up front. If they had said, hey, this is a 6-issue miniseries, I'd be okay with this being pretty much all set up, no payoff, because, well, I know there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. But this is an ongoing series.
In theory.
So I expect the plot to get ongoing, and it didn't. So
makes sense.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yes.
Now, this, of course, is the week of October 21st, 2015, which we all know is Back to the Future Day. So we've got Back to the Future number one from IDW here. This is got a lead story and kind of a backup story. Lead story was by Bob Gale for the story. Both stories were by Bob Gale, but the first one was written by Bob Gale and John Barber with art by Brent Schoonover. And the second story was by Bob Gale, but it was actually written by Eric Burnham with art by Dan Schoening. First story, when Marty met Emmett, we get to find out how they meet. Hey, it's a nice little story about how Marty and Doc meet. We get a couple of good character bits. The framing sequence of Doc telling his boys how they met was kind of cool. The Rube Goldberg-ish kind of a thing at Doc's place was kind of interesting. But ultimately, it's a good story, not amazing. It fits the timeline and the continuity, but it's not as satisfying of a how they met story as I would have liked.
definitely the weaker of the two.
The backup one, looking for a few good scientists. How and why Emmett was teaching classes at the California Institute of Technology. Don't know. It's not like he needed to work. His family was rich. But then him kind of getting recruited to the Manhattan Project was interesting. And I liked this story, but I'll be honest, I don't know why they chose to tell it or where they're really going with this. And this one's to be continued.
Yeah, and I'm wondering going forward if we're going to have some tales retold by Emmett in one half of the book and in the continuing story of the prequel, Doc Brown prequel, in the other half of the book, and for however long this lasts. I wonder if that's the way it's going to go.
That's,
I don't know.
Excellent question. As for how long it's going to last, it was solicited as a 4-issue series, but they've solicited a fifth. So it's 5 of 4 issues is how long it's going to last, I guess. So, hey, it's a time travel book. They can retroactively change the length.
Okay. We'll
let them do that. Some of the other stories I know we're going to get are about kind of Biff's family. And I thought it was a good move for them to focus on the characters of the series and learning a little bit more about them, maybe a couple of plot points we hadn't seen before or something, versus trying to do another time travel arc along the lines of the three films. I think that would have been, frankly, if they could get that kind of a story really well done, don't do it in a comic, do a film.
Yeah, to me, this is your Saturday morning cartoon version of a hit movie that was a blockbuster, and we want to continue to mine that gold. So let's do a version that's for the kiddies on Saturday morning. And not that they have Saturday morning cartoons anymore.
I was going to say, they did 2 seasons of that already.
And, is this a...
They did a 2-season cartoon show based on Back to the Future, and it also got adapted into comics.
Okay.
So, to me, this is not quite that Saturday morning version of the stuff. It's more like the novelization of, or the further adventures thereof kind of a thing.
Yeah, it doesn't feel sophisticated to me. It feels very Saturday morning. So, yeah, I didn't think it was as heavy as anything like that. The art was okay. I enjoyed the second story a lot more than the first, and I thought it was much stronger art-wise as well, and it was about some aspects of the story that I found interesting. And the first half was basically a rehash and nothing new and not told very well.
I would agree with the not told brilliantly, but it was new stuff. We'd never known how they met. So I don't really see it as a rehash. Certainly, though, him getting bullied by Needles and stuff like that is reminiscent of things we'd seen before.
I will defer to you since I know you've recently watched the trilogy and I haven't seen it for decades. So I'm gonna give the nod to you on that.
I would say it's not a rehash, but it's very much in the vein of things we'd seen before, making it feel not horribly original. So I see where you're coming from on that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to love this book. I thought it was okay. I thought it was a bit above average, but not tons. I'm going to go with a B-, but I wouldn't. I mean, it was a toss-up between that and a C+.
Yeah, I'm at a B- as well, and it's a slightly lower B- than Karnak's B-, but... Yeah, that, like I said, the second half was much stronger than the first and elevated it out of the C territory for me. If you're fans of the properties, check it out. I mean, I think it's well worth checking out. And it might really connect with you if you really want more of that world. It felt a lot like that Bill and Ted rehash that we reviewed a while ago. It felt kind of like that. So I don't think I enjoyed that much either.
I think the big difference between the two for me was Bill and Ted, that miniseries read like a third movie.
Yeah.
This felt like...
deleted scenes.
Short stories set within.
Yeah.
And not even deleted scenes, because they don't really work as that. It's just fleshing it out further. Which is, again, exactly what they set out to do. So I'm not knocking that.
I would say the first half could have easily been a deleted scene.
Yeah, I don't know that story. I mean, I was curious how they met. That answered the question, but didn't make me think, wow, now I'm so glad I know.
Right, right. Because, I mean, then after that story, the scene of him walking into Doc Brown's in the early scene of the first movie makes more sense.
Let me put it this way. When I was in college, I started reading the Star Trek novels. One of the ones I read was Kobayashi Maru. And it's how the original Kirk and Company crew had gone through that no-win situation test in the Academy. And for most of the characters, when they got done explaining this is how they got through that test or another test, I'm like, yeah, that's how Kirk would have done it. That's how Scotty would have done it. It's like other options just are incomprehensible. They got it right. Here, Doc and Marty meet. Okay. It didn't feel iconic or like there was no other way it could have happened. And it wasn't bad, but it wasn't brilliant.
Yeah.
And, that's a lot of comics are that way.
Yeah, this could be one of many versions of how they met.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing with time travel is they could do others and just say the timeline changed.
There you go.
So I've read a lot of stuff, but I've still got a dozen or more books left to read this week. I'm trying to think if there were any that were particular highlights. Star Trek was a lot of good stuff with the Mirror Universe.
Did you like the Star Wars prequel?
The end of the journey to Force Awakens or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
What we got was good, but what we got was not fulfilling. It's like they just told, here's the next day or two, whatever, and these two characters. And I'm like, even at the end, I'm not sure why I really should have cared that much about those characters.
Yeah, I'm wondering if one of those trees are going to play a big role in the movie. I don't know. I'm trying to put my mind around exactly how this will be relevant to the new movie. Be curious to see.
It wasn't what I was expecting it to be. And that's not a bad thing. I think my expectations were just wrong. But I was expecting it to be more of a bridge from the classic trilogy to the new one than just one of the many stories that are taking place in that time frame. And that's clearly what it is. So I think they could have pitched it better.
The 3D IMAX theater where I'm close to where I live sent me an email about they're doing an all-day, all seven movies in a row on the 17th of December.
Wow.
That would be, I don't think I could make it. I don't think I could make it through it, but it is tempting. It is tempting to watch them all on the big screen and get in succession. I think that would be fun.
That's a long day though. I remember doing the original trilogy at one point back in college at one of the theaters, a couple of friends of mine. And it was a blast. It was a lot of fun, but I mean, seven
three movies
films.
Is enough. Three yeah. movies is probably enough.
Yeah. See what else came out this week that was good. Got first issue of Astonishing Ant-Man, first issue of Uncanny Inhumans, second issue of Amazing Spider-Man. A lot of interesting stuff going on over at Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I'm looking forward to find out how we got there once Secret Wars ends.
They actually referenced that a little in Weird World number 5.
Yeah, I'm not reading that one.
Can't say that I blame you. It's the one that it's a little more it's the most Vertigo-ish of the books I've seen out there.
Oh, darn it. I missed the boat then. I thought 1872 ended really well.
Yeah, I was pleased with that and looking forward to seeing more of those characters.
And we'll see more of those in Red Wolf or in something else?
Red Wolf is where I'm expecting.
I think that'll be fun.
Yeah. To me, Red Wolf was one of the breakout characters of the Secret Wars stuff.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out now, and I didn't before, so that's good on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really a lot more keen on Batman and Robin Eternal now that I've read three issues. It's a lot more interesting to me.
I'm liking it. One of the listeners was saying it's a 26-issue run. But I'm looking forward to the rest of it. It's, again, I love the various Robin characters. And it's a focused story, and that helps it a lot. That was one of the things that didn't work as well for me at times with Batman Eternal, is it just seemed to kind of rotate through different plot lines.
It's a fun group of characters, I think.
Yeah. It's a fun group, and hopefully they've got a strong enough story to sustain it for the length they're going. And I'm sure they do. They've got some really good writers and stuff over at that part of DC. One thread on the forum I want to talk about briefly. It's one that I think you started.
Uh-oh.
It's on price gouging. And part of what I wanted to mention is, one, it's been up there for a bit, and we're still having some movement on it and stuff. And one of the more recent threads I saw, or recent posts on that thread, was somebody saying how they think there may be a price hike coming up at DC because the newsstand versions are priced a dollar more than the direct market versions.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
And I think they had photos of Harley Quinn at $3.99 and $4.99, which is a scary thought.
Ooh, is that one of those digital code things, or?
I don't think so. From the way it was phrased on the post, just sometimes they charge more at the newsstand. Now, that could be because of the returnable aspect. I don't know. I don't really follow what's going on the newsstand that much.
Mm, I didn't know. Yeah, that there were even newsstands.
Yeah, they're hard to find, I bet. But, I mean, the whole price gouging thing kind of hit a chord with me because, on the one hand, I completely agree a lot of these things are a bit overpriced for what we're getting out of it. You know, it's hard not to read something like the Karnak or some of these other things that are a bit decompressed, thinking I spent $4 on it and got how much story?
Yeah, 20 pages and half of it was decompressed.
Yeah, so overpriced, sure. Price gouging, the term, though, implies a certain amount of unethical behavior. That, to me, was a little bit of a sticking point, because I don't know that they're being unethical. Now, that's not to say I think they're being totally ethical, because, I mean, they're out to make money. That's the publisher's jobs, you know? Sales aren't going up, so I guess prices kind of have to. And to me, they're taking the easy way out by raising prices, if that's indeed what they're going to be doing. And certainly the prices we've got now are higher than they should be. But at what point does it cross between this is just painful and you've got to be kidding me, they're charging what, to it actually being, come on, this is just not right at an ethical level?
I need to go back to your definition because, yeah, you and I disagree on the definition of price gouging. Let me find
it. It's not my definition. I pulled it off Wikipedia.
Yeah. So that's yours. That's yours.
I didn't put it
seller,
on Wikipedia.
When a seller spikes the price of goods, services, or commodities to a level much higher than is considered reasonable or fair. And that's where I stopped. And it goes on to say, and is considered exploitative, comma, potentially to an unethical extent. And that's where I don't follow that line all the way, but I do realize that what they do a lot of times, let's say DC tends to do this, play a lot of games with Batman. Batman's their best-selling. It's probably on the most pull lists of anybody, of any of their titles. So they'll hike it up for a month, a dollar or two, add a couple pages. They'll drop it back down. They'll hike it up a dollar or two. They'll drop it back down. The market cannot react because there's no way that collectors who have it on their pull list, it doesn't look, you know, it goes up temporarily and comes back down.
In fairness, this is a pre-order market that has catalogs coming out, so they know it's going to have the price hike in advance. They've got the option of stepping off the issue. Is that going to happen? Absolutely not.
It is unreasonable. That is not a reasonable expectation given the way the market is set up for...
Well, given the storytelling structure, you would be missing the finales and some stuff like that.
Right.
If they were done in one, then yes, stepping off issues is not a big deal. Okay, those are fair points.
So that's where the gouging term comes in, is where I think they take the opportunities for high-selling titles that readers clamor for, and they add price to that.
I guess the part that puzzles me, and again, what you're saying, I get it. But I look back in past years when Marvel would release a 16-page story in a $3.99 book. Literally half the book almost was ads.
Yeah.
That feels a bit more like price gouging. Or when they would do it's a $2.99 book, here's a $4.99 issue, and suddenly it's a $3.99 book after that. Not so much price gouging, but certainly playing with numbers. And they're very much pushing what is... Marvel was quoted at one point in one of their shareholder, I think it was, meetings. And Jason Wood over at 11 o'clock was the one who called them out on this. They'd made a comment about testing the elasticity of the price of comics. If the market will bear $3.99, we'll charge $3.99, or something to that exact effect. Forget the exact quote, but elasticity of price, that phrase or one almost identical to it, was used. And it was very much, hey, we think the market will bear this, so we'll charge it. At which point, if the market will indeed bear it, whether we like it or not, it's hard to consider that price gouging so much as profit maximization in a perhaps not too brilliant approach.
Yeah.
Because I think the higher prices are what's driving down sales. That having been said, I don't think lowering prices will increase sales. It's kind of a one-way valve there.
But it's not an either-or proposition.
True.
I think that they're pricing themselves out of for a lot of casual readers. And
oh, absolutely.
It's unfortunate.
I agree with that 100%. Casual readers, I don't see how they can exist because, again, pre-order market, that kind of puts off casual readers. $3.99 for a comic, that puts off casual readers. It's only part of a story, that puts off casual readers. They've almost geared the industry against casual readers, which is stupid. How do you get new readers?
And one of the earlier number ones of Amazing Spider-Man this year, I believe it was $6, $7, $8. I can't remember exactly how much they charged for that number one. Million people wanted it. And then they shoved the complete first issue of Inhumans in there, which I had already read. And so
they also had some other additional material. I'd have to do the math on how many pages of original story versus the price point. But that's the difference between is it overpriced or is it price gouging? And that is a case where, yeah, when you cram a whole nother issue inside of it, there is something a little unethical on that, not just from a consumer level, but, I mean, when they do that, they're forcing higher shipping costs on retailers and things of that nature. But then you could argue the whole bonus edition for the digital stuff in comics for Marvel is the same sort of behavior.
I mean, and, you know, we see it in the top 10 sales every month. There aren't any $2.99s in there unless it's a Walking Dead book that sneaks in. They're all the big ticket, high-priced books.
So few books are $2.99 now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of a circular argument there. I mean, to me, is this counterproductive? Is it a bad move for the retailers? Absolutely. But when incendiary term like price gouging gets used, it kind of frames the situation a little bit differently and makes it harder to convey to the publishers, you're doing a foolish thing. If you did lower prices, you did this, you might be better off.
Yeah. And I would just go back to the definition from Wikipedia. Spiking the price of a book to a level much higher than is considered reasonable or fair. That doesn't seem incendiary to me. That seems like a spot-on definition.
Okay. I mean, if they were to come out with a $7.99 book and it had the same 20 pages of content, absolutely, I'd be right there with you. Most of these other, they're at least trying to put more pages in there. Granted, not always original pages, as we've talked about.
Well, what I assume we're headed towards, and I'm surprised we're not there yet, is, you know, basically the top 50 books every year or every month, you know, those are all going to go to $4.99. You know, your Spider-Man's, Batman, Justice League's, you know, your X books, those are all going to be $4.99 books. And they're going to be there month in and month out, and they're just going to move that way. And then maybe the second tier will stay at $3.99 for a while.
Well, and that's part of why I wanted to bring this topic up, was the post with the Harley Quinn cover at $4.99 and at $3.99. Two versions of the cover, the different price point. That's very alarming to me. I think $3.99 as a price point got a lot of pushback. $4.99 gets to the point, and we're already got books at that price point. Typically, they're longer books, but not always. At what point do they price themselves out of the market, and you hit that breaking point where suddenly people in droves say, you know what, I've had enough, and they leave?
Well, there's the entire Wolverine, Death of Wolverine miniseries was $4.99, correct?
I'd have to go look it up, but probably.
I think all of them were, but
I'd be surprised if they weren't, to be honest.
There haven't been that many that I've noticed where the entire series has been at a $4.99 price point. There have been isolated issues. A lot of annuals are $4.99.
I expect an annual to be more because it's got more pages, more story pages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why on a couple of the reviews we did lately, I counted some of the number of story pages because I felt like we actually got a lot more story. Mm-hmm. It turns out in some cases we got an extra 10 pages over what we would normally get.
Right. But then that is also saying, well, that's at the industry standard. If the industry standard is $3.99 and 20 pages, if that's okay, then therefore 10 more pages, you should be able to add another dollar or two. And I don't accept that premise.
Why not?
Because I don't think $20 and 20 pages and $4 is a reasonable price for a comic.
That's different. That, I think, is overpriced. Not going to argue with that. However, if you go with that price for 20 pages and then say I'm doing 30 pages, I'm going to bump it up correspondingly, and the price per page is still in line, I can't consider that price gouging.
No.
Overpriced, certainly.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, when I got into comics, things were like 35 cents, 30 cents, whatever. You could be a casual reader at that point. You can't be now. And that's part of why it's hard for these books to find traction. Every time the price of the book is that threshold it's got to get over of return on investment, enjoyment, whatever you want to call it, for somebody to say, you know what, not only did I like it enough that I'm okay having bought this book, but I like it enough I'll pay that again. And how many times have we talked about where you've said, yeah, it was all right, but not good enough for me to come back?
Yep.
Totally reasonable answer. You know, Titan Sun's a good example of that. It, frankly, did a horrible job selling itself on that next issue. So if people don't come back from that, that makes sense to me.
I'm really curious about this, if they use the newsstand as to float price raises for their comics, and then that becomes the norm. Because he's saying that at Barnes & Noble, it's $4.99, but you're saying it's because it's returnable, probably.
I'm saying that's a possibility. What he seemed to be suggesting is they're using it as a trial balloon or as a, you know, advanced scout to see if $4.99 works.
Yeah, those are sitting on the stand next to an $8 Popular Mechanics magazine. So I mean, yeah, I guess I can see that. I guess I can see that making sense if you look at it as a periodical next to the magazines.
But if that's the price we're looking at, maybe not immediately, but 6-12 months from now, man, that another dollar bump on most of the books, I don't know how much the market can bear. So something's got to be done. And raising the price, that's not the something that's got to get done.
I don't actually think $4.99 will do it. I think we've seen that it doesn't change. It doesn't turn anyone off from the big books. I mean, it'll kill the indies. It would just kill the indies. But
we're already seeing a lot of second, third tier DC Marvel books just not surviving. And I think what happens is as you raise the price of Batman, well, maybe I don't need to buy Robin. You know, you raise the price of Avengers, maybe I don't need to go read, you know, some other character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people have a budget. And, you know, you raise the price like that, it drains the budget much faster.
Can you imagine if you're doing a Batman Weekly and it's $5 a pop?
I think they'd have a hard sell with that. I mean, it's already at the point where for a comic, I think you could buy two movies on iTunes. Assuming they're $1.99 or something, or at least two episodes of a TV show or something.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to get the return on the investment per issue better. They need to tighten up the writing. They need to make it feel like it's not highway robbery sometimes to get, you know, four scenes and the premise of a story, but not actually really get into the meat of the story. Yeah. So on that note, preview spotlight deadline is November 7th. So tell us what books you're excited about and how affordable they are. No, seriously. We had a really good turnout last time. There's plenty of cool stuff coming up. I've posted on the forum what my picks are. And definitely I want to hear what other people have and stuff.
Yeah, the previews will have already been out by the time this goes up.
Yes.
It comes out
on the 28th. We're recording this the day before.
I won't get mine until Saturday, but I will go through and look at my picks then.
Sounds good. Anything else? Does that do it?
Nope, that'll do it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week for Art Ops number 1 from DC, Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 from Marvel, and Black Magic number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.